I stretched my legs out and rested my head on the back of the chair in an attempt to ease my internal turmoil. My stomach was a lake of volcanic lava, bubbling and popping fiercely in its crater, with each additional piece of onion, every sip of whiskey setting up a fresh, violent reaction. Watching Granville at work, a great wave of nausea swept over me. He was sawing busily at the roast, carving off slices which looked to be an inch thick, slapping mustard on them and enclosing them in the bread. He hummed with contentment as the pile grew. Every now and then, he had another onion. "Now then, laddie," he cried at length, putting a heaped plate at my elbow. "Get yourself round that lot." He took his own supply and collapsed with a sigh into another chair. He took a gargantuan bite and spoke as he chewed. "You know, Jim, this is something I enjoy. A nice little snack. Zoe always leaves me plenty to go at when she pops out." He engulfed a further few inches of sandwich. "And I'll tell you something, though I say it myself. These are bloody good, don't you think so?" "Yes, indeed." Squaring my shoulders, I bit, swallowed, and held my breath as another unwanted foreign body slid down to the ferment below. Just then I heard the front door open. "Ah, that'll be Zoe," Granville said, and was about to rise when a disgracefully fat Staffordshire Bull Terrier burst into the room, waddled across the carpet, and leapt into his lap.
"Feebles, my dear, come to Daddykins," he shouted. "Have you had nice walkies with Mummy?"
The Staffordshire was closely followed by a Yorkshire Terrier, which was also enthusiastically greeted by Granville.
"Yoo-hoo, Victoria, yoo-hoo!"
The Yorkie, an obvious smiler, did not jump up, but contented herself with sitting at her master's feet, baring her teeth ingratiatingly every few seconds. I smiled through my pain. Another myth exploded. The one about these specialist small animal vets not being fond of dogs themselves. The big man crooned over the two little animals. The fact that he called Phoebe Feebles was symptomatic. I heard light footsteps in the hall and looked up expectantly. I had Granville's wife taped neatly in my mind. Domesticated, devoted, homely. Many of these dynamic types had wives like that, willing slaves content to lurk in the background. I waited confidently for the entrance of a plain little housefrau. When the door opened, I almost let my vast sandwich fall. Zoe Bennett was a glowing, warm beauty who would make any man alive stop for another look. A lot of soft brown hair, large grey-green friendly eyes, a tweed suit sitting sweetly on a slim but not too slim figure, and something else. A wholesomeness. An inner light which made me wish suddenly that I was a better man, or at least that I looked better than I did. In an instant I was acutely conscious of the fact that my shoes were dirty, that my old jacket and corduroy trousers were out of place here. I hadn't troubled to change, but had rushed straight out in my working clothes, and they were different from Granville's, because I couldn't go round the farms in a suit like his. "My love, my love!" he carolled joyously as his wife bent over and kissed him fondly. "Let me introduce Jim Herriot from Garraby." The beautiful eyes turned on me. "How do you do, Mr. Herriot?" She looked as pleased to see me as her husband had done, and again I had the desperate wish that I was more presentable, that my hair was combed, that I didn't have this mounting conviction that I was going to explode into a thousand pieces at any moment. "I'm going to have a cup of tea, Mr. Herriot. Would you like one?"
No. Thank you very much, but no, not at the moment."
I backed away slightly.
"Ah, well, I see you've got one of Granville's little sandwiches."
She giggled and went to get her tea. When she came back, she handed a parcel to her husband.
"I've been shopping today, darling. Picked up some of those shirts you like so much."
"My sweet, how kind of you!"
He began to tear at the brown paper like a schoolboy, and produced three elegant shirts in cellophane covers.
"They're marvellous, my pet. You spoil me."
He looked up at me.
"Jim, these are the most wonderful shirts. You must have one."
He flicked a shining package across the room onto my lap. I looked down at it in amazement.
"No, really, I can't."
"Of course you can. You keep it."
"But, Granville, not a shirt. It's a very good shirt."
He was beginning to look hurt again. I subsided. They were both so kind. Zoe sat right by me with her teacup, chatting pleasantly, while Granville beamed at me from his chair as he finished the last of the sandwiches and started again on the onions. The proximity of the attractive woman was agreeable, but embarrassing. My corduroys and the warmth of the room had begun to give off the unmistakable bouquet of the farmyard where they spent most of their time. And though it was one of my favourite scents, there was no doubt he didn't go with these elegant surroundings. And worse still, I had started a series of internal rumblings and musical tinklings which resounded only too audibly during every lull in the conversation. The only other time I ever heard such sounds was in a car with an advanced case of displacement of the abomasum. My companions delicately feigned deafness, even when I produced a shameful explosive belch which made the little fat dog start up in alarm. But when another of these mighty borborygmi escaped me and almost made the windows rattle, I thought it was time to go. In any case, I wasn't contributing much else. The alcohol had taken hold, and I was increasingly conscious that I was just sitting there with a stupid leer on my face, in striking contrast to Granville, who looked just the same as when I first met him back at the surgery. He was cool and possessed, his massive urbanity unimpaired. It was a little hard. So, with the tin of tobacco bumping against my hip and the shirt tucked under my arm, I took my leave. Back at the hospital, I looked down at Dinah. The old dog had come through wonderfully well, and she lifted her head and gazed at me sleepily. Her colour was good and her pulse strong. The operative shock had been dramatically minimised by my colleague's skilful, speedy technique, and by the intravenous drip. I knelt down and stroked her ears. "You know, I'm sure she's going to make it, Granville." Above me, the great pipe nodded with majestic confidence. "Of course, laddie! Of course!" And he was right. Dinah was rejuvenated by her hysterectomy, and lived to delight her mistress for many more years. On the way home that night, she lay by my side on the passenger seat, her nose poking from a blanket. Now and then she rested her chin on my hand as it gripped the gear lever, and occasionally she licked me lazily. I could see she felt better than I did.